This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Hello, welcome to the Friday Twilight Show. I'm Maxine, and today it's International Women's Day. So the show will be dedicated to celebrating women in leadership. I'm privileged to be joined by Jess Pather and Karen Earp, two amazing head teachers, to talk a little about their careers, their lives, and their achievements. Why do women make such great leaders? Join us to celebrate.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
And hello, welcome, and happy International Women's Day to all of you. Thank you so much for joining us on the Friday Twilight Show. As I said, tonight is
this show
all
is
about,
brought to you in part.
This tonight is all about celebrating all that is great about women and leadership. And one slight technical hitch there, of course, just to get us started. Excellent. So, really, really pleased that you've joined us this evening. And like I said, tonight's show is dedicated to celebrating women in leadership. Why do women make great leaders? And we'll be celebrating some really amazing leaders, past, present, and hopefully future too. So the focus tonight is all about celebrating women in leadership. And I'll be joined later on. I can see Karen has joined in already, which is brilliant. Hi, Karen. Great to see you. We're joined by two brilliant head teachers from very different backgrounds and very, very different schools, and both of whom I've had the absolute privilege to work closely with, Karen as middle school colleagues, and Jess for a short time over at Lee Manor in Luton. And I'm really excited to talk to them tonight. So just a little bit about the show in general and some of the things that we're going to be talking about before I get on and start to welcome our guests in. So as I said, the focus tonight is celebrating women in leadership. We know that women are underrepresented at leadership level in education, but that this is improving. So whilst education is a female-heavy industry, we know that. So the statistics, 22 to 23 in the DfE Workforce Service survey, 76% of the teaching workforce, teachers and school leaders, were female, but only 69% of school leaders were female. But that was an increase from 66% in 2010. Slightly older document with a bit more detail in it. So primary schools, women make up 85% of the workforce, but only 74% of primary head teachers in 2020 were women. And secondary school, unsurprisingly maybe, that gap is even wider. So 63% of the workforce, but only 40% of secondary head teachers are women. So good news in some ways, you know, between 2010 and 2020, the proportion of leadership roles filled by females has steadily increased from 67 to 70%. And that increase is more pronounced in secondary, where the disparities between female teachers and female leaders is larger. So there is progress going there. But there is still that imbalance. And, you know, data showing that men progressed faster to middle leadership roles in primary schools. So on average, it would usually take, according to DfE research, it would normally take, so about 8 years from entry to the profession to the first middle leadership post. So, you know, the median male teacher new to a leadership position in primary has been qualified for 8 years or less, compared to 10 years or less for the median female teacher. So again, women taking a little bit longer than men to get into those leadership positions. In secondary schools, there's little difference. So the median time taken is 8 years for both men and women, which again, that's interesting, may not be surprising to some. That there are these statistics. So we know that education is, you know, is a sector where there are more women than men. So 22 to 23, 76% of the workforce, teachers and school leaders were female, but only 70% of school leaders. And then when you take that to headship, those figures are even wider. So primary, 85% of the workforce and 74% of head teachers were women. In secondary school, 63% of the workforce, but only 40% of the head teachers. So it's really great to have this evening two of those brilliant leaders who are both in the secondary sector, two women leaders in secondary. Karen, we'll talk a little bit about her background and her school, just to talk about their journey. Now, I'm just going to give a little bit of a shout out before I go on any further. On Wednesday, Michelle Hines, in her Twilight show, asked whether women have smashed the glass ceiling or merely cracked it. And she was joined by a couple of fantastic women, Yolandi Biosa, a head of school in Abu Dhabi, who's previously worked in London, and a second woman as well, who's currently an assistant head, female assistant head. It's a really great show, worth a listen. And they really dig in depth into those reasons why, you know, what's holding women back, why aren't women as equally represented, what's difficult, and also do that celebration as well. But tonight, I really want to focus on celebrating all that is great about female leaders, as well as hearing a few stories, a few tips and comments, and a little bit of a background about their whole roles and what they hope and how they inspire others. So, Karen, I can see you're with us. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to briefly introduce Karen, say a few things about her. Now, one of the things you will notice about Karen when she starts speaking, you'll notice that she is really, really quite, she doesn't like to blow her own trumpet, and she doesn't like to say how great she is. I was really lucky to facilitate on a program for female leaders with Karen. And one of the reasons I asked her to come along here this evening was because I saw firsthand how much she inspired a lot of the young women who were on that course, who were on that program, who were thinking about whether to step up into leadership or not. And some of them were in the early stages of leadership and had worked with Karen a little bit, and they really, really warmed to her and looked at her and saw her as such a great role model. So Karen's had a really, really varied career that she'll tell us a little bit more about. You know, she's taught in 7 different schools, and she's had senior leadership roles in 5 of those. Her current school, Henlow Church of England Academy, is such a fantastic school. It's a very, very special place. And when Karen first started there, it was a really small middle school. Now, those of you who aren't familiar with middle schools, which many of you won't be because it doesn't fit into the primary secondary system, middle schools have the last 2 years of primary, year 5 and 6, and then the first 2 years of secondary, 7 and 8. And they are really special places. As a former middle school head myself, I know just how fabulous they are. And what Karen did with this school, and we'll talk to her a little bit more about that then, it's a school with a very, very special culture, really warm, welcoming place where the students, where children are just so loved and so cared for. And Karen used that in such a wonderful way to build on and to make it a really thriving, high-performing school and build on those strengths already. So Karen's also trained to be an Ofsted inspector in 2023, and she joins teams as a serving head teacher, and is also branching out into leading a MAT. And again, Karen's a super educated lady with a master's that she got from Cambridge University. So you're probably getting a view that I have quite a lot of respect for you, Karen. So I hope that's okay as an introduction. And I'm going to welcome you in and say thank you for joining us.
Hello, Maxine. Hopefully you can hear me, and so can everybody else.
I hear you loud and clear. Brilliant. Thank you. It's really good. Thank you so much for joining me this evening at the end of a busy working week. I know what it's like being a head teacher. So thanks for giving up your Friday.
No, it's a pleasure to be here on International Women's Day. And I've just been hearing your kind words. I've been laughing. So good job I've been on mute. But and actually, you've made sense of all of the things that I've done. Actually, you've put a narrative around it that makes it actually make sense. So thank you very much.
Oh, Karen, thank you for saying that. And I did deliberately speak about some of those things before you came on, because I know how immensely modest you are. And, you know, if I might just say, some of those things that I've seen about you working with women leaders in your own school, and some of the ones on the programme we worked on were people that you'd crossed paths with previously, and just looking at how you talk and how you inspire them. That's why I really wanted you to come on and talk this evening. So welcome, huge welcome to you.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a few years ago now that we were actually working with women into leadership, and I thoroughly enjoyed that. I know when you sit down to actually put your ideas together, you wonder what it is that you're going to say, but I think I think one of the privileges we have really is of being able to help other people find their way through, and to know what sort of things to what might inspire others to face the difficulties, you know, to learn how to, I suppose, be yourself, and yet to treat each barrier as something that not only can you get through it, I suppose it's a cliche, but you will come through that barrier a bit stronger. At the time, some of those things that will happen along the way, I think some of, you know, we will all have that. It's inevitable. But I think knowing that you will have those challenges, and that you'll be strong enough to come through them, but B, there's other people around you that you can turn to, because I think that's one of the things that happened on that course was we were able to take an interest in the stages that people were at, what experiences they might want next, and how to consider making that happen, or at least putting some steps in to the right direction to think that might happen.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Karen, and that's absolutely what I saw from you. And I think that when we talk about celebrating women leaders, I think the way that you have really worked consciously to try to inspire others, well, not just to try, to successfully inspire others, and how you've been really warm and honest and open and vulnerable about those challenges, but also with that common thread of, yes, you will rise and this will make you stronger, shape or not. That's how that came through. So, yeah, I think that's a really important point, Karen, and that's something that is very special about you as a leader, and as a leader that inspires other women leaders.
Yeah, I like anybody else, I think you don't set out with everything in front of you and think, this is, well, I didn't think I'm going to be ahead. I'm setting out to do this. And I've thought actually back to when did that occur to me, that's really was something that was going to happen. And I, you know, I began a really, really, really long time ago. So it's not been a quick journey to headship. And there have been, I did have to, you know, try along the way quite hard to get the roles that I wanted to get. There were times when I didn't think that was going to happen. And I think having that, once you get that idea in your mind, and you can say, actually, I do want to be a head teacher. That's a key moment, and it'll be different for everyone. But it won't necessarily be that the head that you're working for at that time, that you know that it's anything critical about that. But in your own mind, you'll start thinking, you know, what if, and maybe I could. And when you start sort of thinking, well, maybe I would do this, and maybe I would do that, and I think then you start to think, well, this would be exciting. Actually, I could put myself forward. What would it be like to lead a whole school? And there are days when you look at that role and you think, I don't think I can do that. even now, I've been doing that for 10 years. You look at that and you think, it encompasses so much. And I think that's one of the points you were making about maybe it takes longer, and you cited some research that women it might take 10 years and men it might take 8 years, and that there is possibly a dwelling on all that it involves, and therefore if you do dwell on that all day every day, you're never going to think you're ready. And in fact, when we used to run that course, one of my slides had a title on it that was about underestimating your own ability, and also waiting for the perfect moment. and that perfect moment, well, probably isn't going to come, and yet other opportunities possibly are. And I think that's probably what happened to me. You know, when I look back at my the beginnings of my headship, that didn't look like that's what really was going to happen. I was borrowed from another school. It was a temporary appointment, and I've now been there nearly a decade. In what was what I thought was going to be possibly a stepping into headship, and I didn't know that this was going to be the right thing. It was a middle school. I'd never worked in a school with years 5 and 6, and yet now, having been in a school with years 5 and 6. That insight has definitely made me a better secondary head. Understanding, really truly understanding years 5 and 6, which I didn't know that I needed to know. I didn't know that was going to have so much impact. And in fact, I work with quite a few secondary staff, inevitably now being in a secondary school, and those of us who have come from that immediately from being in middle, all of us look at that as an incredible time, and one that has actually helped us become secondary practitioners. So the message for others really is, sometimes the opportunity that will present itself in front of you may not be the one that you had in your mind. And sometimes we've got to put our best foot forward and be prepared to go with that opportunity, seize those things, because they might lead to other things, or they might be the right thing in themselves. And okay, this was a secondment. This was a fairly, you know, a really fairly big possibility. But sometimes you're invited to present things. Sometimes you're invited to a meeting where you think, you know, why me? Why that meeting? You're invited to collaborate on something, or you're invited to write something, and really getting involved and not having in your head like the only way this is going to happen if I do X or Y. It's being prepared to see that in a wider perspective And when that opportunity comes, it might not be in the shape you thought it was going to be in.
Karen, I love that quote. I'm going to take that. Sometimes the opportunity that's in front of you may not be the one that you had in mind. That's absolute genius. I mean, that whole idea about, you know, seize the day, collaborate, go on, get involved and do. And you know, for you, that involved going and stepping in a middle school that needed, yeah, you know, needed some leadership.
Yeah.
And you did that, took that on, and have done such an amazing job. And that's really interesting what you've said then about how that leadership of middle school leaves you well informed for secondary, how those year five and six.
Absolutely. And I think I don't know if you've read some of what Sheryl Sandberg has written, but I think her book's called Lean In, I think. And that is also about recognising and sort of seizing those opportunities, sort of visiting other schools, having an online presence, the sort of networking, the secondments, that kind of thing. So leaning in her words.
Leaning in. And do you think women are more or less likely to do that leaning in?
I think starting that is hard. I found that hard. You rightly summed me up at the start, and I wouldn't.
No,
it just doesn't. That's not me. To set out to, yeah, I think you said blow my own trumpet on something. Yeah. It's not me. But I think I grew in confidence once I found myself with a few opportunities. I grew in confidence to do that. I think the first steps for me were quite, I was a bit naturally a bit reticent. But I think once I took a first few steps, I found it easier to lean in. I suppose it's, and that's where other people can help, because perhaps someone around you is noticing that, you know, that's your current scenario, and that those other people might see moments where you could shine. That's what I think our role is. That's what I think very much my role as a head teacher is, and for my staff too, that I can spot those moments, see those opportunities. Sometimes it's a twinning of a massive need we have as a school or in our sister school, and thinking who really might take their next step and shine in that moment where there's an hour of need for our schools, and it might just provide somebody with that opportunity, that next step, that possibility. And I think once you have, you know, started doing that, then it might bring you a bit of confidence. I think having other people around you that are supportive of that makes a massive difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for your people that you're working with, and, you know, for women and men who work with you, they've got a real life role model right there who has done that, who's as open and honest and vulnerable to admit that it wasn't always easy and comfortable to do that, but has stepped out and has gone for those different things. So, Karen, just moving on a little bit, I wonder if you could share any of your thoughts celebrating women leaders. You might have other women leaders that you want to give a shout out to, or say anything that you think is particularly strong or positive about women in leadership. What traits do you think women bring to leadership that are, you know, are really strong and are really useful, particularly in education?
Yeah, I've listened to a few women leaders that have made a real difference from time to time. I went to a conference, it's a long time ago now, and I heard Stella Remington speak. Mm-hmm. And at the time, she had been Director General of MI5.
Yeah.
And when she was talking and what she was trying, what she was talking about was balancing that role with ordinary life. Mm. And she was taught, she told a story about her, one of her children being ill, and the kind of job that she was involved in at that time meant it was really, really difficult for her to actually support her child at that moment. Mm. And that really resonated with me, because I thought twinning this motherhood with this all-consuming job, and I'm thinking her job, Director General of the MI5, if she can do this, I can be ahead and be there when my child needs me. And I think hearing other people say that, for me, that was a really important moment. And I, you know, I still remember the feeling I had, thinking, yeah, that's really good to hear somebody else. What a relief to hear somebody else say, this is possible. You can do that.
Yeah, and I can almost hear the relief in your voice as you say that, because you are a mum, and you know, you're a great mum. You've got your lovely daughter, and you've juggled those roles of mum and head teacher, which can't have been easy.
Yeah, that's been a fabulous journey, and my daughter has appreciated visiting all of the schools that we've been in, and enjoys visiting my current school very much, and she's been able to see firsthand kind of what that's like, and I think that's been good. Now she's older, she's in year 12, and we're able to talk about that, so it's great. You know, she's seen what I've been doing. She's seen the school that I'm in now. She's seen it grow. She's seen the fact that she came in when I first started at that school, and she's seen now that we're a really flourishing secondary school. She's seen the building program and all of that. So, yeah, that's been great to have my family and the support I have of my family while I've been doing all of that. That's been truly important. And I think, you know, Stella Remington she wasn't talking about a headship, she wasn't talking about education. And so sometimes it doesn't need to necessarily be someone in education who you're listening to that gives you a message that you think, well, you know, this is inspiring. This is something I can do. This helps me with a barrier that, because in my mind I wasn't sure you could manage both. And she was able to do that. She was able to help me feel that you could. And I also listened. I met Kelly Frederick, who was the head of a school in London, and one of the heads of the Round Table group. And I listened to her as well, talk about, actually she was talking about thinking about how you present yourself in the best light and feel okay with that, how you do blow your own trumpet if you're going to go for another job. And she was about to retire, I think, when she was talking. So she was saying she was retiring from headship, and she was reflecting on how she was going to put herself forward for another role and put her best foot forward and kind of brag and feel okay about that. And she was saying that it's taken her a while to feel that there is a time and a place to sing your own praises. And when we are putting together an application for a role, seeing ourselves in that role, projecting ourselves, you know, meeting governors, trustees, staff, students, then they are looking at us and wanting us to lead.
Yes.
And therefore you do need to project yourself as a confident leader in that moment. And so that balance is hard.
Yeah, I mean, Karen, that's amazing though, what I've just heard from you. You yourself have called out two role models that you've picked up and taken from. And I really like what you said about Stella Rimington. It's not about education, it's about leadership, it's wider. But also then moving on to this advice about stepping into the leadership role and it being okay to, you know, say those positive things. So two last things just to round up, really. So first, I'd like you to tell us a little bit about some of the things you're really proud of. Just summarise some of your highest, you know, biggest achievements, things that you are most proud of. And then any summary thoughts and bits of advice for any women out there, particularly aspiring leaders.
Yeah, it's quite timely, actually, because last night we had Year 11 Parents Evening.
Yep.
A live parents evening, which we haven't had for quite a long time, but also we've never had a Year 11 before.
No.
So this is our very first Year 11, and the students who are in Year 11 have been with us since Year 5.
Goodness.
And it's just amazing that there was such amazing feeling last night, and some really wonderful comments from parents, and I think actually we're all feeling quite emotional as Year 11 are about to sit their GCSEs, coming to the end of Key Stage 4, and we genuinely have been through this together. We set out in Year 5 not knowing that actually we would become a secondary school along the way, hoping, but not knowing. And I think when we come to that final assembly and that prom at the end of all of this, there's going to be a few tears. But yeah, that for me, being part of that, making some really difficult decisions along the way,
yes,
really tricky ones. I genuinely feel we're a part of something great and a real community around us. And, you know, my leadership team have been just fabulous during that time. You know, we've come together as a great team to make sure that this could happen. And so I think that really is my greatest achievement.
Well, you have so much to be proud of there. I mean, you know, we've got a whole other show there on leading through change, Karen. I'm just scribbling down and making some notes, so I'll be back in touch and interview Steve and Naomi to come on and talk as well. That would be better. You as a, you know, you've modelled some of those things that I think, if, you know, on listening on catch up, if we've got some really, you know, aspiring female leaders who are listening to somebody who can be vulnerable, who can talk openly about that whole idea of sometimes the opportunity that's in front of you may not be the one that you had in mind. And now look at you growing that little middle school into a big, successful secondary and managing all the change that's gone through with that so sensitively and with such immense strength, Karen. You are quite right to be proud of that. So thank you so much. Any sort of final thoughts and closing comments from you? Because I've used a lot of your evening and it's fantastic to speak to you.
Okay. Yeah. There's a quotation. It's a fine thing to have ability, but it's the ability to discover ability in others. That's the truest test. And I think that's what we as leaders must do. Discover ability in others.
It's a fine thing to have ability, but it's the ability to discover ability in others. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes, yeah. Also, I'll send you the quotation. I need to find it. but Karen, but yeah, that's what I think we do.
Thank you so much. And what a, you know, great congratulations on everything, you know, throughout your whole career. And that, you know, there's all those other stories about being the only woman on a big on a leadership team in a big secondary school and all that other stuff that we've talked about before. But I think your great achievements there with Henlow are a lovely place to stop, and your key messages for great leaders and for aspiring female leaders. So thank you so much, Karen. It's been great to talk to you.
Thanks, Maxine, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you. See you soon. Bye-bye. Huge thank you to Karen. I can see that we've got Jess joining us now as well, and is ready to talk. Going to take a few moments just to hear from our sponsors, and then I'm going to talk about a few things that make women good leaders. And I think after hearing Karen, you probably don't need to even hear this. So let's go over, first of all, just to hear a little bit from our sponsors.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
So back after just hearing from our sponsors there, that's great. I mean, it's been amazing to hear from Karen there. What a fantastic leader. So, and we're about to talk to Jess in just a few moments. So we've heard right at the beginning, we know the statistics that whilst women make up a significant percentage of the workforce in teaching, they then are actually underrepresented when it comes to leadership. So just those straight statistics again that we've looked. So 76% of the teaching workforce, but only 69% of school leaders. And then in secondary, where of course both these leaders that we're talking about, we've got 63% of the workforce, but only 40% of head teachers being women. So looking outside education, similar patterns too, but there's been so much research about what makes women great leaders. There's decades of psychological research that confirms that when women are empowered to take on leadership positions, the effects can be metamorphic for everybody. It can be so strong. So first of all, in way back 1992, years ago, an analysis of 61 studies showed that women are more likely to epitomise what's good in the organisation and inspire people to go along with its vision, with its mission, than men are. So women can step into and live that vision and values, which is so important when it comes to school leadership, better than men. That's been proved in a load of different studies. The other thing is, fortunately, a 2020 study, a big study again, similar researchers to before, showed that fortunately now people are actually seeing women as being as competent as men are, and that some of those competence stereotypes have changed dramatically. If we go back to the days of 1946, only 35% of those surveyed thought that men and women were equally intelligent. Fortunately, by 2018, this has changed to 86% who think that men and women are equally intelligent. And of those that didn't think that women were equally intelligent, 9% thought that women were more intelligent, which I think is really, really interesting. So people are really seeing the brains and the intelligence of women out there. There's another study going back to 2010. By organisational psychologist Anna Anita Williams-Woolley, a PhD, a really, really strong collaborator and study, showed that team collaboration is greatly improved by the presence of women in the group. So if women are involved in a team effort, this study showed that there was greater equality of conversation and turn-taking, and that groups were more responsive to one another and able to make the best use of knowledge and skills of other members of the team. So again, when women were involved, there's better use of everyone's skills, according to that study. It also shows that there's also studies that show that in organisations where a female leader is present, that people that work there will have a greater perception of fairer treatment everywhere else in the organisation. Now, that makes lots of sense, doesn't it? That people will think, will be less likely to perceive or less likely to feel that they're under, they're being underrepresented or they're not being treated fairly. But I think some of that's really interesting. You know, I particularly like the research that shows team collaboration being improved when women are involved in the teams. You know, I think that's really interesting. And I think the bits there about, you know, people now seeing that women are equally intelligent. And I think that whole idea that there's been studies that have shown that women leaders are stronger than men, according to those studies. And remember, we said at the beginning of the show that this, you know, there are also like lots of really strong male leaders. And we also know, and this comes through in Michelle's, that there are, you know, also some female leaders that aren't as good. So we're not, you know, it's not completely one-sided here. But there are some really interesting pieces of analysis that show the strength of women leaders across all different sectors, not just focusing on education. Now, when you've heard about when you've heard the brilliant Karen talking a few minutes ago, you're not going to be surprised to hear that that research is out there. And when we talk to Jess as well in just a few minutes, you'll see another example of a really strong female leader. So a bit similar to how I introduced Karen at the earlier on in the show, I want to do a little bit of a run-in and an introduction to Jess. So Jess is an English teacher by trade. That's her first subject, and she absolutely loves and she's totally passionate about the subject of English. And taking on and running the school that she runs at the moment, where levels of literacy have been very, very low, and that's been a huge barrier to achievement across a whole range of subjects, because we know at GCSE, if youngsters can't read, that's a big barrier to achievement across the board. Having Jess in there running the school, I think with her love and her passion for English language and literature, is such a strength. Jess is also, from, you know, my own personal experience of Jess, just such a quietly confident, calm leader. And she has stepped in and has gained headship at a really challenging, tough school. Lee Manor School in Luton is, you know, a very, very typical, what you would describe as a challenging school. And the term that I spent working there, there were a number of temporary staff. It was a really challenging place to be and some exceedingly challenging students. There's been an immense staff turnover, and Jess has had a huge job to manage this team. And one of the things that I think that Jess has done particularly well, I mean, when I walk towards the school now, you know, and you can see that the atmosphere is calm, that there's purpose, that students are now talking about being proud of attending Lee Manor. But one of the things that she's done, and you know, she'll say that she's been supported by the trust, and she will have been to a good certain extent. And there's been a number of new staff who've been really strong, and I'm sure she's going to credit her team. But I'm going to be really clear before Jess comes on that I think one of the big challenges that Jess has done absolutely beautifully, that I'm not sure all leaders could do, is to bring together such a new team to be really, really effective. So I hadn't given her a warning that I was going to say that. So I'm going to come to Jess in just a minute, and I'm going to talk to Jess about her experiences, her life, her journey, and then obviously I'll come on and talk about what she's proud about. But that's one of the things that I've noticed about Jess, that quiet, calm leadership. But she has done such a job in pulling together a really new team, a really diverse team, and a team that had a lot of talent and, you know, some really great people in it, but creating that team, nonetheless, a huge challenge. So Jess, without waffling on any longer, I'm going to welcome you and say thank you so much for giving up your Friday evening and joining us.
Hi, Maxine. Thank you so much for having me on the show and such a credible introduction. I'm not so sure I'm deserving of it yet, but I'm really excited to be on here with you and to hear your voice again after a while.
Yes, it's been a while, hasn't it? But again, it was a real pleasure to work with you for that short time and to get to know you, Jess. So, Jess, if we start, first of all, just a little bit about your journey to headship and any of the sort of key helps, key step-ups, some things that have helped you get there, or maybe some of the things that have been a bit tricky along the way. So just about your journey to headship for a start.
Okay, well, I'll give you a little brief outline of me as a person and how I got to the headship that I am in today. And you know, there's being in Luton and having been in Luton the last 11 years as a deputy at Denby High School and now the head at Lee Manor. Before that, I was in a comprehensive school in Watford in Hertfordshire in Bushey, also serving a deprived community there. And I think that happens to be my area forte and my preference for leadership. But just a little bit about me, so you understand why I have such a passion to be serving communities that face such barriers. I was born and I was raised and had all of my education as a second-class citizen, really, in apartheid South Africa. So, you know, for me, there was no equity and very limited opportunity as a South African Indian. And my first real teaching experience began here some 24 years ago in Watford, Hertfordshire, Bushey. Bushey is quite an affluent area, but the school that I was in was a comprehensive school at that time, in the midst serving one of England's largest council estates. So I had a real introduction in and a cultural induction, I think, into teaching in the United Kingdom and of course, teaching English here. But I developed a real passion, and what I had to come to terms with is understanding disadvantage in what for me is a first world nation. And coming from South Africa, an African perspective on first world countries in health and education was not what I expected to see in the communities that I was serving. But through that journey and development and the ownership of, you know, my own professional development and my experiences with families and people I worked with and mentors and leaders and coaches along the way, I really did understand cultures and melting pots and communities and how communities drew together and the real importance of education for those who are struggling against barriers in life, be that socioeconomic deprivation or lack of resources or lack of identity in lots of ways. And I think my best learning experience really did come when I joined Denby High School in 2012. And at the heart of it, had to quickly learn how to master my craft in a very rapid way, because everything centered around teaching and learning, and the experience in the classroom that you gave children was really so very important. And once you got that right, everything else kind of found its place, you know, behavior for learning and feeling valued in school and wanting to attend school. And so I did quite a bit of my learning there, and my forte really is curriculum and assessment. I can do pastoral, Maxine, but it doesn't come naturally to me. You know, give me a book and some marking any day rather than a report card to chase. But my journey to headship came through, you know, that old-fashioned route of being a teacher, learning that craft, understanding teams and people, growing into leadership through becoming a second in English and thereafter a head of English and a head of faculty and joining a leadership team and broadening that leadership experience and developing thoughtful processes around strategy, not just management and leadership. And spent a few years being the deputy head at Denby and then having the wonderful, wonderful opportunity and privilege to now lead Lee Manor on its journey as its head. So yes, it is very complex, and it's taken a lot of self-belief, especially as a woman in leadership, such an underrepresented group. So it's a steep hill climb, and I'm shifting and growing in myself as what I'd like to call a competent woman in leadership.
Jess, that's absolutely fantastic. And in terms of a competent woman in leadership, that's, you know, that's without a doubt. So just a couple of things from that. First, a common or a theme that I've seen elsewhere with leaders who I really respect, and, you know, our CEO, Adrian, has spoken about this purpose-driven leadership. You know, your own background there, you describe yourself as being treated as a second-class citizen, as an Indian in South Africa, actually feeling that firsthand, and that gives you the drive to want to really change and improve community and life chances for the children that you serve. That really comes through strongly there, Jess.
It does. You know, there are social, there are lots of barriers a woman face in educational leadership, in my opinion. I think gender bias is quite a deep-rooted stereotype that hinder women's progression into leadership and roles in education. You know, there are glass ceiling phenomenons that I think women often encounter, invisible barriers that prevent them from advancing beyond a certain level in educational hierarchy, which in my view is still largely male dominated. And there are societal expectations and stereotypes, I think, regarding women's roles and capabilities, which can discourage them from pursuing leadership roles or undermine their confidences. And despite efforts, I think, to promote gender equality, I think implicit biases and stereotypes persist in educational institutions, Maxine. You know, from a young age, I myself was exposed, and children today are still exposed, I think, to societal norms and expectations regarding gender roles and abilities. I think these biases can sometimes, if we're not careful enough in this society, manifest in classrooms where teachers may unconsciously favour male students or underestimate the abilities of female students in certain subjects, you know, particularly those traditionally associated with males, such as mathematics and science. And as a result, women may receive less encouragement and support to pursue advanced studies in these fields, and that's limiting opportunities for advancement in educational hierarchies.
And from your perspective as an education leader there, you describe your privilege of leading a school like Lee Manor. That means that you, as such a good, strong role model with that, you know, that story and that success behind you of where you've got to with your achievements, that you can model that and challenge that firsthand, I presume.
I can. I really bear quite a bit of emphasis on organizational culture. I think it's so important. I think if cultures prioritize masculine leadership traits and values, it can create hostile environments for women. And I am very fortunate at Lee Manor. I have a super strong senior leadership team and with quite a balance of gender roles on there. And what is really great about the team and the wider staffing conglomerate as well is that there is a balance of male-female representation in every aspect of the school curriculum, and those conversations and those talks and sharing just stories and talking to one another is important. And I don't know, perhaps, you know, I haven't met, Maxine, I have to say, very many talkative men in my life. You know, I tend to find a lot of talkative women. And I guess being a woman, I am interested in the person, and I'm interested in knowing something personal about every one of my colleagues at work. So, you know, I value them enough to be interested in their lives and their day to day. They aren't just teachers in my school or leaders in my school or support staff in my school. They are people first. And some people do refer to me as the mother hen, and I think sometimes I can be, and sometimes it's important to be. But it's important to have, you know, conscious awareness of who you are and what you want to achieve. And I don't think this is a gender role necessarily, but rather, you know, the ability to communicate the why and the how and to support those who are unable to develop their confidences or drive standards and improvement, and to really understand what is that barrier in their work life or professional growth, and support them in growing the strengths needed and the skills for that.
I think that's interesting there. You've referred to that ability to drive the why, to have that purpose, and to, you know, that links to one of the pieces of research that I referred to that said that women are more likely to, you know, really get hold of what's strong about the organisation and are more likely to get people to go along with its mission. And I wonder if you agree with that, if that's something that you see from yourself, from your own perspective, or if you've got any other views on what makes women really strong leaders, or what you see as strong leaders from women.
You know, there's so much research, Maxine, out there, and on such various perspectives about women and strengths and women in leadership. And a lot of research always tends to go back to that maternal nature and caregiving roles that we do have as women. And we are compassionate in that way. I think there's a degree of patience that we have, and the ability to listen, not just hear, if that makes sense.
Mm.
I think we do have that patience to do that. And in doing that, we are listening with very different ears, with a real sense of interest in understanding the person in front of us. Mm. And I tend to naturally maybe default. I hope my team is not listening to this. I didn't really advertise this tonight, Maxine. But I tend to sort of have a drive towards wrapping around my younger staff, and I hope that's not too ageist, but I guess that comes from my own experience of having experienced mentorship and leadership in my own professional growth and the value of that. Sometimes my values seem old-fashioned, and I don't know if they are, but there's young talent. And, you know, there's often some criticisms of head teachers being too young. I remember, you know, a good 15, 20 years ago, as schools that were struggling in special measures, we would have this flying off super heads, I think is what we used to call them, very, very young heads. And I don't think that in this modern world, in the way that we're progressing, that there's necessarily anything wrong with having young colleagues in leadership. I think they bring a different sense of energy. I think they bring a different enthusiasm. I think they bring a fresh pair of eyes in a world that actually, even at my age, seems a bit out of reach with me, and I'm a bit out of touch with some of the mod cons of the world now, you know, in terms of social communication and you know, what's online and what's hip and what's trending, and how young people view the world in the way that I view the world at their age in the context that I was growing up. So I think there's a lot of value in investing in young talent, and an equal value, of course, in investing in those with experience from over the years.
And that's certainly something I see in your school. You know, you've taken the time to get me to have a chat with some of your youngsters about teacher training, and that really came through in that conversation. And I, you know, I see that from you, that nurture, that growth, and build your team. And that's something that is clearly really strong at Lee Manor. You referenced your time at Denby, and obviously that's somewhere where your talent was spotted, and you were also grown and nurtured and progressed, and now have got this opportunity at Lee Manor. I wonder what, if you'd like to share some of the things that you're most proud of as a woman leader.
Oh, you know, that's almost a difficult question to answer. Well, if I were to be really honest about that, I am most proud of the young talent that I had at Denby High School, who were a part of my English team when I was the head of English there, who were back in those days called NQTs, ECTs now. But to have watched those young people grow into leadership in our own trust and in schools outside of our trust, to have been in those classrooms when they were learning their trade, cutting their teeth, making those errors, learning from them, you know, the tough days, the good days, watching them grow from really, you know, they're in their early 20s when they started. They're having their own children now and having been to their weddings and their babies' christenings and all sorts. And that's really proud to watch them flourish and thrive and pass on their learning to the generation that's coming after them, and to watch them become those leaders in education, mentoring and coaching others. And it's a funny thing, you know, you get caught up in work every day and you forget what's happening, and you just get caught up in the day to day. And when we returned from the Christmas holidays this year, the trust had a really phenomenal idea, you know, a much talked about cross trust professional development day, and all of the departments across the trust went to different schools, and we had sessions and lectures, and it was a really lovely getting together of staff. And it so happened that at Lee Manor, I happened to have hosted all of the English departments from across the trust and all of the RE departments from across the trust.
Wow.
But what hadn't occurred to me on that day is that I would be addressing a staff body where I would recognize so many faces from across the trust, you know, from the past 11 years, people that had coached and mentored me, and, you know, in the Daniel Connors and the Patrice Evans of the world. And then looking out at the audiences to, you know, the Leah Ferguson Moores, the Amy Lanes, the Nicola Quicks, the, you know, all of those, the Nuruddin Malawis, the all of those people that were in my team, well, my babies essentially. And I'm looking at them there, and there they are sitting on senior leadership teams in their own schools, coaching and mentoring the next generation of teachers. And that is my proudest moment to date as a head now.
That is something to be so proud of. You have been such an important part in the growth and development of some others then that have now grown on and become immense leaders themselves. And then you think about that influence that you've had and how that then starts to grow exponentially through them doing the same and following that culture that you've brought in there, Jess, which is quite right to be proud of that. So I'm glad you've hugely pleased that you've shared that. You are so modest as well, and, you know, doing such a great job. Lee Manor is a truly transformed school, and you've grown so many other leaders through your time at Denby, and now will be growing other great leaders through your time at Lee Manor as well, which is amazing. And just really to finish with, any key words from you about, you know, for any aspiring female leaders, or for female leaders that are out there, any women leaders in education, what words would you like to share with them?
I think I'd like to share, Maxine, to any leader out there, any woman, is to be confident in your own skin and to believe in who you are and the purpose and the journey that you are pursuing. And so long as you have an integrity in that and you're pursuing that journey with good direction, with honesty, you won't go wrong with that. And for me, it's about sharing the most important value that I have, and it is about people first and the job second, and to nurture and to care and to lead with compassion. And with that, you will nurture others, and in turn, they will nurture others after them and grow good talent in this fraternity, which I think is so very important.
Jess, they are such beautiful words and such an important sentiment about growth, nurture, integrity, and confidence in who you are. Thank you so much for your time this evening. It's an absolute privilege to talk to you.
Thank you, Maxine, and happy Women's Day.
Yes, happy International Women's Day to you too. Thank you, Jess. Thank you, Jess. Thank you, and goodbye to Jess. A huge thank you. What an absolutely amazing leader. We've overrun very slightly, and it is time now to go to the news. Let's hear from our sponsors and let's hear from the news. But I mean, crikey, two amazing leaders to hear from then. We're also joined, I can see that we've got Michelle Hines is listening as well, who did the amazing show about glass ceilings on Wednesday that I mentioned at the beginning of the show. And I'm just going to read out a quote that Michelle's popped in the chat here. She's just said, as women leaders, our emotions are our superpower. And yeah, she's stolen that from one of her guests on the Wednesday night show. So we're really seeing here tonight the strength of women leaders in education, and two great examples there in Karen and in Jess. Absolutely brilliant leaders. What a privilege. Let's go over to the news.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
School absence, a seemingly ever-present feature in our news at the moment, has raised its head again, this time in the form of fines for parents. The Guardian covers the detail that fines in England for unauthorised absence are set to rise by 33%. Education Secretary Gillian Keegan said she was bringing penalties under a national framework to help tackle inconsistencies. The Department for Education said fines must be considered if a child misses 5 days of school for unauthorised absence. Under the new rules, the initial penalty notices will increase from £60 to £80 per parent per child. Anyone who cannot pay within 21 days will have to pay £160, rather than the current 120. Schools will also share daily registers online with the Department for Education as part of the drive to improve. ASCL's Jeff Barton said the wider issues linked with poor attendance, such as anxiety, disengagement with education and wider social problems, needed addressing by working with families rather than fining them. Labour's Bridget Phillipson said the Conservative government was only just waking up to the damage of persistent absence, but that they should address the causes rather than the symptoms. The Daily Mail highlights the continuing difficulties faced by some schools in recruiting appropriate specialist staff for some subject areas. It reports on one school's desperation and the measures they have had to take by putting large numbers of pupils into masterclasses to support the teaching of science GCSE. Whilst the article describes the decision as a drastic measure, it points out that there is a nationwide crisis in teacher recruitment and retention, and government missing its teacher training targets yet again. Schools are increasingly using non-specialist teachers to cover classes, so the masterclass approach could be here to stay for a little while longer. School holidays featured in the news again, with the debate centering on the long summer break. It prompted much discussion on social media, and teachers, school staff and parents all joined in the debate. The Guardian, however, chose to focus on the benefits one school trust said it had noticed, this time in the area of staff attendance and well-being. The Unity Schools Partnership Trust found that staff absences fell by 50% after it extended the autumn half term by a week in both its primary and secondary schools. Pupil illness absence also fell by 25%. 58% of parents supported the change, which is now permanent, although parents of younger children expressed worries around childcare. In Wales, the BBC reports that the government has admitted to failing to follow the law when stopping free school meals during the holidays after the summer of 2023. Two families and a legal charity claimed ministers had not considered the rights of children. The government accepted it should have done more to assess the effect of the decision, but the Education Minister in Wales said the government could not afford to reintroduce the meals. The government will have to pay the legal costs of the claimants. Finally, the BBC also focuses on a scheme in one Lancashire high school which is encouraging students to embrace phone-free days. Pupils are able to hand in their mobile phones before lessons, and pupils themselves report greater focus and fewer distractions. But the school leaders also report reductions in incidents of bullying and online abuse. Esther Jai, mother of murdered schoolgirl Brianna Jai, has also had a video meeting this week with PM Rishi Sunak to discuss her campaign for greater online safety and an age limit for smartphones. She described the meeting as really productive. Schools were issued new guidance on mobile technology in February of this year. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio News with Jo Fox.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio.
And thank you to Jo Fox for more brilliant news this week. Well, two amazing women leaders. Tonight's Twilight Show, the Friday Twilight Show, celebrating women in leadership on International Women's Day. I can't think of two better leaders to talk to this evening than Jess and Karen. And just to recap some of the common themes that we've heard this evening. So what we've heard from two head teachers from very, very different schools, both secondary schools, both been through a period of significant change. Karen's has grown from a small middle school to a large and now successful secondary school. Again, just seeing their first year 11s this year who've been with them since year five. The staffing changes, the culture change, the growth, but keeping that really strong Christian ethos and the care that's needed in there has just shines through, and I can see that happening. And also talking to Karen and hearing about, you know, her own admission of her vulnerabilities of not always seeing what's best in her and not always being willing and not always wanting to step up. And I think that lovely piece of advice that sometimes the opportunity that's in front of you might not be the one that you had in mind is a really interesting thought. And then hearing from Jess, you know, Jess talked about her own background, about the own difficulties and about the, you know, about the inequalities and the lack of equity that she's faced both as a woman and as an Indian in South Africa. And that start, that's really kept her and given her some real drive and is provides some of the purpose behind her leadership now, leading Lee Manor, one of the most challenging schools, I'd say, in the country. You know, certainly if we were judging by Ofsted reports, we'd be seeing that going back a couple of years ago. You wouldn't recognise it from the school that it is now and where Jess and her colleagues have brought it to. You know, really, really genuinely life-changing stuff for the children and young people and that whole community of Marsh Farm in Luton. Now, Jess and her team have done such amazing work there. But some of the other themes there that I'm seeing is, again, linking back to that research about how strongly women can bring vision and get other people on board. So look at the changes that have gone on in both of those two schools and that continue to go on. And we see there examples of two leaders that really lead by example, really purpose-driven leaders who are taking people with them successfully and doing a really, really strong job. And the other key theme that I see there is that view of nurture. You know, I could hear the pride in Jessie's voice when she was talking about seeing the leaders that she's grown from her days at Denby High School, where, you know, people who were in her English department have now grown and they are now people who are leading across big schools and, you know, the trust and playing a huge role and her pride in those. And that, you know, that then crosses over and takes me back to the quote that Karen shared with us when she shared the Elbert Hubbard quote, which is, it's a fine thing to have ability, but the ability to discover ability in others is the true test. Again, really, really clear. And, you know, that's so evident in both of them. So thank you again to Jess and to Karen. You are truly inspirational women leaders, and I can't think of better leaders to be here tonight on International Women's Day. So thank you very, very much. Some great advice from both of you as well for anybody who is an aspiring leader about seize the day, collaborate, get involved, about being confident, as Jess said, in who you are and pursue your goals with integrity. And that whole thought as well of people first and professionals second, though, to keep those things and hold those things true and close to your heart. A few bits of advice as well. I've got, I've just been looking at an article that has been published by the NAHT that I think prior to the NAHT publishing it, it was a School Students and Teachers Network blog. And again, this is a really, really good piece of work here. And I see it just, it's from Danielle Lewis Ogona, the CEO of Cygnus Academies Trust. And she gives a few tips and a few pieces of advice to women in education and women leaders. So this is her first one. You don't have to have all the certificates and qualifications before you step forward for a leadership role. Just know that's where you want to be, then find good mentors and coaches. Again, something that we heard from Jess there, really great mentors, coaches out there, people who will get behind you. If you want to do qualifications, they don't always need to be in education. Do them in business. Look at what leaders outside education do, whether they are in sport, politics, social, commerce. Leadership is leadership. So again, I think that's an interesting thing about looking outside leadership, not just for qualifications, but for role models in leadership. And I really liked, again, how Karen referred to Stella Remington, who was the head of MI5, when she talked about her own experiences and how that had helped. Again, another piece of advice, remember how important family and home are. Whatever you're doing in your work, this is a job. A plan and a network will make sure you don't burn out. And that's certainly one that I would really endorse that. Again, like Jess said, human beings first, professionals second. So important. If you're going to weather the storm, find your people, your network, so you're not alone. And again, that's something that we've heard from both Karen and Jess. It's about making strong networks, linking with people, working together. And again, the final piece of advice that we get from this, again, a really great leader from Danielle Lewis Ogona, is she says, learn how to stand your ground and when to fight the good fight. And I think that links back as well to what Jess was saying about being confident in you, who you are. Pursue what you're going to do with integrity, and then know, find that place to stand your ground and be committed to who you are. So this has been, so far, a really great opportunity to celebrate female leaders. What I'm going to do is take one more word from our sponsors, and then I'm going to come back with a few final shout-outs to some people, some great women, who I just want to give a final mention to and say a thank you on International Women's Day. So we'll just go and we'll hear from our sponsors.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
So I'm going to start with a thank you to Michelle. Michelle Hines has joined us on the show this evening, and she's chatted and made some lovely comments. I loved your show on Wednesday, Michelle. Thank you very much for being here this evening. So now I'm going to give some shout outs to some really great, mostly women leaders in education, but people who have really either helped me along the way or people I look to and I really find inspiring. So I'm going to give a mention to Sue Teague. Sue Teague was head teacher and I was her deputy head going back in about 2006, 2009. I learned so much from Sue about strategy, about distributed leadership, about sharing responsibility, about how to give people their space and let them get on and do their job. In addition to that, Sue has an immense sense of humour, is really, really, you know, people driven, and all that we've heard from Jess and from Karen about getting people on side, about having a vision and keeping people with you. Sue was great and definitely was a major player in helping me getting into headship, and then remained an immense level of support throughout my headship. Always been somebody that as a head I could get straight on the phone to, and would always have some really sensible words of advice, and would, you know, hold me to account when I needed holding to account, and would just be such a great inspiration to me. Anna Rogers, I worked with back in about 2006, 2008, and Anna was a really, really young deputy. And I think the fact she'd made deputy head in a school that was pretty challenging, where there was nobody else wanting to step up to that role by about 25 and then head teacher by 28, the fact that she made that progress was just because she was so committed to wanting what was the best for the children. And everything that Anna's done, you know, Anna's taken some time and made sure that she's done what's right and what's best for her own children. She's got two lovely boys, but she has such integrity. She's so hardworking, so determined, and, you know, just has that massive commitment to the children and to making things the absolute best that they can be. She also has a great sense of humour, is really human, and has a strong sense of faith. So it's been a real pleasure to work with, to know Anna. And again, I've enjoyed working with her again recently. Somebody else I'm going to give a shout out to is Monique Berry, head teacher at Springfield Primary. I only worked with Monique for a short amount of time, but she has the biggest heart, passion, vision and determination, and is so much about what makes a female leader truly great. I'm going to just give a small shout out. I've coached on MPQH in the last 18 months, and I've coached the international cohort, who are absolutely fantastic. And there are some great leaders there who are either principals or heads already or deputies. And I just want to give a shout out and say thank you for being so brilliant throughout the whole of the coaching, for being good humoured, for being committed, and for being so open and honest and just brilliant. So Francis, Elle, Rianne, Marianne, Bina, Alison and Amanda, all truly inspiring leaders in your international schools and some really, really challenging contexts. At the Academy of Central Bedfordshire, you will recall a few shows ago meeting one of the deputy heads. I met the whole senior leadership team, but I want to give a particular shout out to deputy head Rita Pescatelli, an inspiring, tough lady, in, you know, such a great leader in a tough environment, with a real determination to make sure that young people get the absolute best education and what's best for their life chances. Chiltern Learning Trust have done a really nice shout out every day this week to somebody. Yesterday it was the wonderful Tilly, the youngest employee and definitely a leader of the future, the marketing assistant. Thanks, Tilly. You helped me enormously. To Helen Masters, the director of Send and Safeguarding, Teresa Kelly, director of finance and compliance, Dr. Patrice Evans, who has already had a mention from Jess for being just such an inspiration to so many women leaders in our trust and in our local area. Dr. Patrice, the most iconic and inspirational female leader in Luton, she was described on Twitter. And I can't disagree with that at all. Also a mention to Linda, assistant site agent at Chorney High School for Boys, for being the longest serving female employee and certainly for knowing Sufian as a student and then returning there later as a professional. That in itself has to definitely give her a shout out. And also another great woman from Chiltern, Flora Burt, somebody who is a brilliant leader, great improvement advisor and a really wonderful role model to other women, particularly women with young children, watching how she balances career and brings so much value to so many people. She's absolutely, totally superb. So a big shout out to her as well. And finally, as we come to the end of the show, I want to do one final mention to my first teacher before I'd even got as far as school. My mum taught me to read, write, draw, helped me with my artwork, much of which ended up displayed around my primary and secondary schools. quite often. Total disclaimer here, passed off as my own work, but my mum was a much better artist than I ever will be. She devoted so much of her life to looking after me and my dad and taught me so much. She taught me to work hard. She taught me, if you want something, work hard and you can achieve it. Definitely helped me believe I could do anything. Well, you know, within reason, more or less anything, but certainly more than I think I would without her drive behind her. She taught me to be confident, to speak up. If something's not right, you've got to say, you've got to have that integrity, don't let it go. So the biggest shout out, so mum, because it's International Women's Day and Sunday's Mother's Day, goes to my mum, Helen Warner. And, you know, she's not been around on earth for quite some time, but she is still here in her way, inspiring me every day. So that has to be my final International Women's Day and Mother's Day shout out to you, to mum. So finally, there is still time for you to celebrate worthy women today, International Women's Day. But also, I think this comes to the point now to really give a shout to celebrate worthy women and brilliant women in leadership, not just on International Women's Day, but throughout the rest of the year as well. So one of the really important things, you know, my last show about positive psychology and about thinking and looking for the good, let's make our final point here about, let's really take time to look for and see the good in people and to notice and be really mindful of these great leaders in education, these great women leaders in education and everywhere else. And just take a final moment tonight just to say thank you, to notice them, and to say thank you and to really appreciate how brilliant they are. Thank you ever so much for listening. If you're listening on download, thank you so much for downloading. That's absolutely brilliant. And it's been great to be here. My absolute privilege. Thank you so much to Michelle for popping in and saying hello and for your brilliant show on Wednesday. And a huge thank you to my fabulous guests, to Jess and to Karen. Okay, good night, everybody. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.